Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The Stanley Cup will be in the building tonight in Sunrise, but unlike the previous three games, it will be handed out to the NHL's newest champion tonight. College baseball's title tilt is also coming up this evening as we close out a best of three in the College World Series. Welcome in to the Lombardi Line on what is a jam-packed Championship Monday. The show, as always, presented by DraftKings. Stormy Bonantoni here, live from downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino, alongside Will Hill, who's in for Michael today. And the real question is, I'm here in Vegas, but where in the world are you right now, Will? What is going on this morning?
It's a great question, Stormy. This should be a fun 2 hours. I had some trees come down near the house, so I am currently blocked off from getting to my own home, trying to get my way home. The cops directing me here and there, roads I've never heard of, so it's a challenge, but it's always an adventure.
I'm so impressed with the dedication that you were still able to hop on the line to join us on the show. Obviously, Will was supposed to be in his home office on Skype, and ideally, we'll get home at some point during the course of the show to do so. But poor guy just tries to go to the grocery store this morning and can't get home. I didn't realize you were basically like the Travelers Championship with trees falling out there. I'm so sorry, Will.
It's all good. I think I broke through and I'm like 2 minutes away from home. So this is a small victory here. So everything after this is going to be great. This is seriously like a Curb Your Enthusiasm, episode where they're pointing me here and there and just blocked off from going to my own home. So yeah, quite the start to the day here.
Unbelievable. Well, you're a saint. We appreciate you. Going to be a great show throughout the course of the next 2 hours. We have a lot to hit on at the end of hour one. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski is going to join us, talk all things Game 7 with the Stanley Cup Final wrapping up later on tonight. In hour two, hit on a little more of the Cup Final with VSiN's own Jared Smith. I'm sure we'll also get some Nerfy and Yerfy action with him like we always do, but appreciate our two guests that are going to join us later on in the show. And let's start with Game 7 coming up tonight. The margin for error is gone. It is cup or bust in Sunrise, Florida. 8:20 Eastern, puck drop on ABC coming up tonight. And the Oilers here on the brink of history as potentially the first team to come all the way back from down 3-0 to win a Stanley Cup since 1942 in the Toronto Maple Leafs. They currently sit -108, Florida -112, although here at Circa, where I'm broadcasting from, the Oilers have become the favorite here, but virtual pick'em game, total 5.5. What are some of your initial thoughts on this series, as it feels like, I don't know if you're a believer in momentum, but that all of it appears to be with the Oilers right now?
Yeah, it's interesting because, one of the squarest mindsets you can have is just react to the last thing you saw. That's why NFL, for one sport, is just hard to bet people lose because it's week to week and they react to the last thing we saw. And I'm careful of that when I'm thinking about this series. That being said, it's hard not to like Edmonton. They've just been so dominant these last three games. And the question I have, and we'll have some great guests here, and the question I have for you, what change after game three? Is it a fundamental change? Is it, you know, strategy? Is it injury? Or is it just the old Jeff Van Gundy adjustment of the biggest adjustment you can make is to just play better? I'm curious what you think about that, because it's hard to handicap this game without, you know, addressing, hey, what has changed here in this series?
Yeah, absolutely. And especially like it seemed like games two and three specifically for Florida that they were really, really playing to their strengths. And then in game four, I thought at the time it was more of a bump in the road type loss, similar to what we saw in the NBA Finals, where the Boston Celtics, you know, dropped a bad game four, come back at home and close out the series strong. That was very much so what I anticipated happening for Florida at the time. But Edmonton just seemed to build on it. And you have Connor McDavid, who goes into God mode, back to back games, first player in Stanley Cup final history to have back to back 4-point games, and really put the team on his back to catapult them to be in the position that they are now. And there are numerous points in this series, Will, where it feels like it was the turning point. Like, was it game four where it's the big 8-1 win? Was it even as recent as in game six, where you have the Florida Panthers with a shot to quiet the building a little bit after the Oilers go up 2-0, and the goal to make it 2-1 is taken off of the board with an offside penalty. That felt like it was another one of those big pivot points in the set. I have a lot of questions about tonight. I am somebody that has a Florida Panthers series ticket in pocket. I'm going to be sweating that out tonight. I decided that I am not going to hedge, although everything in my brain and my heart seems to tell me that Edmonton's going to win this thing. I'm trying to stick with my initial handicap of this series that the Florida Panthers are the better team top to bottom. They have more depth. They are the best defensive team in the NHL this season. They just need to get back to their game. And I'm very curious if they're capable of doing that. They do have the opportunity at home with last change in their pocket. But I'm not sure. From a betting standpoint, though, Will, do you think there could be a correlated play here where if you like the Panthers, then it's going to be more of an under game? If you think that the Oilers are going to win, then it's probably going to be more of an over game like we've seen the last four?
I'm not hockey savvy enough to know that. I did just bet the under. It's moved now where, I mean, you're laying a pretty penny now. Minus 145, minus 150. I don't know if they want to go to five. Maybe they will go to five. That was at least the last I looked where it was 5.5 juice to the under. Game seven's just trend to the under. It makes sense, really, in all these sports, NBA, you know, college basketball, national title game. Teams come out more conservative. They don't want to lose it early. It's like in the Super Bowl. You know, we always see low-scoring starts because – hey, it's a big game. There's some nerves. Refs maybe swallow the whistle where you're not going to get an early power play. So maybe an under, maybe a first period under. Maybe if you get a quick goal, then you can jump back in on an under with with the better numbers. I know a lot of people don't want to sit here and lay minus 150. So to me, I don't know if you'd be better at answering this. Hey, if Florida wins, it's an over. If Edmonton wins, it's an under. I'm not sure. But to me, game seven is just naturally to go under, even though you're missing the best of the number. I will say, if you like the over, probably wait until the very last second when this game starts, because I would think the under money would continue to come in. So I don't know. The other thing too, and I'm curious what you think, is this just a foregone conclusion with McDavid for the Conn Smythe? It's minus 3,000 now. If Florida wins this game 4-0, 5-1, McDavid's still going to get this award? I'm guessing so, just based on the market here.
I think so. And that market is a little bit hilarious to me, considering the movement that Connor McDavid had from around minus 275 prior to game six to now minus 3,000 plus, despite not even logging a single shot on goal in game six. But it speaks to the history, right, of what he's accomplishing in the series. I do think win or lose, he's going to be the guy there. To go back to what you were talking about with the total, the under actually is now even up to minus 155. Back-to-back unders to open this series. We've seen four straight overs since, but this will be the 18th game seven in Stanley Cup final history. 14 straight game sevens in the Cup final have stayed under 5.5 goals. All but one historically have stayed under that number. The only over was the Detroit Red Wings in 1950. And that goes back to what you're talking about in these types of games. Maybe you're a little bit nervous, especially early, holding the sticks a little bit tight, a tighter checking type defensive effort. My lone bet to your other point there is the first period under tonight. It's cashed in all but one game, and the one was that wild 8-1 game four with Edmonton. Slower starting, again, nerves. I think all of that's going to play into this. I do want to make sure that we hear from some of the players and coaches that are involved in this matchup tonight. Bench boss for the Florida Panthers, Paul Maurice, certainly knows what's ahead of his team tonight, but said these are the moments and opportunities that these players have dreamed of.
Game seven Stanley Cup final, it is set for every young man's dreams. Nobody ever dreamt about a game four overtime winner. It's always game seven. I'm not concerned about the past at all, George. We'll do, our plan is set. Started last night after the game. Met this morning, did video. Do the same tomorrow, get ready to play. I know it's 3-3. So the concern of the previous three games certainly didn't affect Edmonton, and it won't affect us.
Well, they also didn't allow as many goals, though, the Oilers, I mean, in those early games as the Florida Panthers have the back half of this. Sergei Bobrovsky, Will, stopped 78 of 80 shots that came his way the first eight periods of this series. But since the start of the third period in game three, he's allowed 14 goals on 64 shots. That's priority one for me if I'm Florida, is has this Edmonton Oilers team got so far into Bob's head that they can't get out of it? I just don't know the answer.
And the other thing I'm curious, and I'm really curious what you think, is Florida tired? Because I've heard of people, a lot of people just say, hey, Florida looks gassed. They look like they're running on fumes. Is that something you buy, or is that narrative based?
I think that you're going to be able to get up for the Stanley Cup final no matter how tired you are. But it's true from the standpoint of the postseason in the NHL is an absolute grind. And the fact that they went all the way to this point a season ago and ultimately ended up losing to the Vegas Golden Knights, that they worked their way back into that position this season, it is very, very taxing. And hockey, I mean, we talk about in the NFL, of course, like how taxing that sport is, the physicality on your body. With hockey, it's a very, very similar type thing. And the grind of the postseason is so much longer. While we're on goaltending, though, I do want to hear from Stuart Skinner as well, the Edmonton Oilers goaltender, who has been masterful the back half of series this postseason. Take a listen.
I think, honestly, we've had a lot of practice, you know, having to push back. I think it was very much earned. We had to do absolutely everything in our power to get to this point where we are, and I'm sure Florida would say the exact same thing. It takes every single guy. It's literally taken every guy in our room to get into a position like this, and it's very exciting and it's very enjoyable to be able to be here.
No offense, but hockey players are like very, very boring in media availability. But Stuart Skinner, got to give credit where credit is due. He has been great the back half of these series, games 4-7 in the postseason, 10-0, 9.43 save percentage, 1.40 goals against average. He's 5-0 when facing elimination. And well, you'll love this. When they were down 3-0, he said, "I don't know the stats, but if anyone can come back, it's the Oil." So he's certainly confident.
Yeah, look, I'm excited. We don't get too many of these in the winter sports. The NBA hasn't played a Game 7 NBA final since 2016. This is only the third NHL Stanley Cup Game 7 final since 2011. So this is a treat. I'm excited. I will be watching every minute. And it's after how boring the NBA playoffs were, it's good we get some juice here in the NHL.
No doubt about it. Okay, hopefully the next time we talk to you after this commercial break, you're sitting in a chair and connected to your computer. We shall see. But we are just getting started here on the Lombardi Line. When we return, it's also a winner take all in college baseball tonight. Will the Tennessee Volunteers finish the job as the first number one overall seed to win the College World Series since 1999? Plus, Scottie Scheffler does it again. And what happened in the W last night? Could Angel Reese be poised to upset Caitlin Clark for Rookie of the Year? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The wait is almost over. Our VSiN NFL betting guide is dropping this Thursday. There's never been a better time to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. Our all-new NFL betting guide is your secret weapon for the upcoming season. With in-depth profiles of every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, and betting trends, you'll have all the tools you need to bet this season smarter. Plus, our experts share their top bets on season win totals, futures, and props, giving you the insights you need to get ahead of the action. But to get the guide, you must be a VSiN Pro subscriber, and for a limited time, you can get our annual subscription to VSiN Pro at an unbeatable price from $240. Typically, you can subscribe now for just $199 when you use our promo code Lombardi. Plus, if you use that code, we're throwing in an extra month for free. That's 13 months of VSiN Pro access to everything we do, including our daily best bets, 24/7 video, premium analysis, exclusive betting splits data, and our special edition betting guides to keep you betting smarter all year long. Don't miss out on our all-new NFL betting guide and this incredible offer, VSiN.com/subscribe. And again, the promo code Lombardi, VSIN.com/subscribe, code Lombardi. Michael Lombardi out today, but in his place, the one and only Will Hill. Make sure if you haven't already, you get the Should Have Bet More podcast. You can also check him out on the Bear Bets podcast with Chris Felica on X at Not The Will Hill. And he is finally in the flesh. So for anybody who missed our first segment, we were on the phone line with Will because a couple trees had fallen down in a storm where he lives, struggling to get home. We have you. You made it. How are we feeling?
I'm great. I feel great. I wish people could have seen me as I'm on the phone, what I'm doing to like get through trees and like eventually get home and like tiptoe through my house, throwing on a different shirt. I mean, it was quite comical. I will say, go back to the NFL betting guide. I got a little sneak peek. It is really good. Awesome. This is one of the best ones I can remember. It's well worth it. So check that out. You said promo code Lombardi. Lombardi can be tough to spell. If you want to use promo code Sunday Bet Prep, I mean, that might be a little easier to spell, but it is really good.
It is funny how every show that we go on, like I filled in on the handle yesterday and Matt Brown too was like, you know, I heard this promo code, the handle works. I'm not sure if Lombardi works. You know, all right, yeah, fine. You can, there's plenty of promo code options. We get it. Let me live. But no, appreciate you joining us today. And you're going to be with us tomorrow as well, correct?
Yes.
Beautiful.
Lucky me. Lucky Lucky you or lucky me? I think lucky me.
Lucky us, man. This is what I'm talking about. Okay, we talked in the first segment about winner take all, game seven in the Stanley Cup final coming up tonight. Also tonight, we will crown a champion in college baseball. Tennessee yesterday was able to get back on over Texas A&M, who won game one in the best of three set. Tonight, A&M a plus 170 underdog. From plus 170 now to plus 185 underdog. Tennessee taking a little bit of money from minus 220 up to minus 245. Total on the game sitting 10.5. The team that forced a game three over the last 11 College World Series has gone on to win seven times. Does Tennessee close it out tonight?
I don't know. I would probably take the plus money with A&M. Having watched, some of this here and there, and I had a bet on Florida at 12-1 to win it all, and Florida 55-1 to beat Tennessee in the final. So I've watched a little less since Florida got eliminated the round before the final because I'm just a little bitter. And it's one of these sports where when you have bets on it, it's super exciting. But when you don't, it certainly loses its luster. I think the price is a little inflated. I think these teams are fairly even. I know A&M's down some guys, so Tennessee's favorite. Tennessee's the rightful favorite. But if I'm betting it, I'm not laying a price here with Tennessee. College baseball is a good live betting vehicle too, because there's just so many swings. The team gets one down a run or two in the odd swing, it's not that big of a deal because you're going to get plenty of runs. So I don't know. I'd probably lean towards, I haven't checked the weather, which is big in these games in Omaha. I would lean towards an under just because I feel like both these teams are going to do everything they can in terms of their pitching to limit runs here. But I would lean towards the dog. It should be a good game. If Lombardi was here, he'd be ridiculing me for, a schedule maker for letting the Stanley Cup final in Game 3 of the College World Series go on at the same night at the same time. Couldn't they have spread this out a little bit better?
Well, I mean, you tell me, Will. So now since Michael can't be here, I have to ask you that question. Yeah. What are you doing? Be better. Come on. We got to spread these things out. Although I will say it is nice, as content creators and people that are trying to host a show every day,
sure.
Very nice that we are at June 24th and we still have Stanley Cup games happening.
I agree. But couldn't we one of them tonight, one of them tomorrow, and then tomorrow we have something to talk. I don't know. I feel like they could have spread it out a little bit. Not that NHL and college baseball fan, I feel like that's a different fan group, but still, there's eyeballs. It's an open time of the year in terms of real estate. If you had one night, the other another night, I feel like it'd be better for everybody. But yeah. What do I?
What do we know? As far as the pitching matchup tonight, the expected matchup is Xander Seacrest and Justin Lampkin. Seacrest allowed 2 runs in 6 1/3 innings in Tennessee's win over Florida State. He's 2-0 with a 1.04 ERA and 17 1/3 innings in 3 starts this tournament. Lampkin started twice for A&M in the Men's College World Series, 1-0, striking out 15 batters across 8 scoreless innings. So to your point, maybe the under is the way to go here, although we've seen money to the over at least so far. Tennessee has stranded a lot of base runners the last 2 games, which for a team that is, number one in the country in scoring and home runs has been a little bit unique. Texas A&M's loss last night was their first of the tournament as well. So I'm excited for this, So I watch the games once we get to Omaha. I used to be really into the regionals, and this year I think that I just was so much invested into hockey that I wasn't paying as much attention as I should have. But Tennessee's so dang good. I don't have a bet tonight in this game. I'm too busy sweating out my Florida futures with the Stanley Cup final that I'm more invested there again tonight, but I'll have both up on the screens. What's your setup at home, by the way? How many TVs do you have going on a nightly basis?
I've got a couple, but usually, especially for live betting purposes, if I'd really just like to watch one game and focus on it that way. But we didn't mention this, right? I didn't ask you this in the first block. I know you have your Florida ticket. Gut feel, who wins tonight? Forget your bets. Forget who you're rooting for. Gut feel, life on the line. Who wins the game tonight?
My gut feel tells me it's Edmonton, so maybe that means I'll be lucky and it'll be Florida because I've been wrong a lot this series. So help a sister out. Yeah, I my gut tells me that it's Edmonton. They've just, the way that they've been able to build up their game the last 3 has been really, really special, and it feels hard to imagine that train stopping. I did want to make sure that we also gave some credit where credit is due. How about Scottie Scheffler yesterday holding off Tom Kim in a one-hole playoff of the Travelers Championship? It's his 6th win now of the PGA Tour season. First time a player's won 6 events prior to the calendar turning to July since Arnold Palmer in 1962. He's dodging trees and raindrops and lightning strikes and apparently protesters as well to
police
go on to win.
Those police. I was worried he might get PTSD with the police, though. out there. Yeah.
So funny. But he brings home a cool $3.6 million. His earnings since March 10th, $25.3 million. And a big bounce back performance from him coming off of the U.S. Open. But it is just ridiculous. Like, he wins everything. His numbers are unbettable at the top of the odds board each and every weekend. Like, how are you supposed to bet golf these days?
I guess you bet Scheffler, or I guess you have your little long shot to have fun with, but you have a little insurance policy where you have something on Scheffler every week, and that little comfort blanket is something that keeps you intact, because if you're playing in the 20, 30, 40 to 1 range, like I know a lot of sharp golfers do, Wes Reynolds had 45 to 1, Vincent Pro Page, and Humans had DeChambeau 21 to 1 last week, so our golf handicapper's been on fire. If you're shopping in that neighborhood, which sharp handicappers usually shop in the 20 to 1 or longer range, you're coming away with nothing unless you're diversifying and playing Scheffler to win or playing some of these other guys in top five. I think that's a good way to hedge, actually, is, all right, I'm going to bet my guy at 20, 30 to 1 to have some fun, but I'm going to have a little something, if not on Scheffler to win, Scheffler top five, or yeah, hey, maybe my guy can win and Scheffler still gets top five. So you have to hedge a little bit. I mean, you're burning money at this point if you don't have something on Scheffler. He's just so damn good.
The unfortunate thing about the top fives and top tens, though, for Scheffler is that, like, they're always odds on, or like plus 150 right, for him to even do that. It's just it's crazy the way that he's being priced at this point. And still to come, the Open Championship for Scheffler, the Olympics, the FedEx Cup playoffs. Like, this season is not over for him, and he has already posted one of the best PGA Tour seasons of all time. Also, yesterday, we got the news that the Cleveland Cavaliers are hiring Kenny Atkinson to be their next head coach. Most recently, he was a lead assistant for Steve Kerr in Golden State, part of that 2022 title run. Prior to that, head coach of the Nets from 16 to 20. He replaces JB Bickerstaff in Cleveland, who was fired after five seasons. What do you think of the hire?
I was a little surprised. I always thought he was a good coach when he was with the Nets. Remember, he led that upstart team in 2019. Then Durant and Kyrie got there, and they wanted Steve Nash, and then that started that whole circus. So I think he's a good coach. I don't know that it triggers a bet, but that's a decent job. It's not a great job, but it's a decent job. Remember, he agreed to coach, I think it was the Hornets a few years ago, then backed out. So you at least have a chance where you have Mitchell, you have Garland, you have some players. I don't know. Sounds like Mitchell's going to stay, but I mean, what's really their upside there other than what happened this past year, where it took everything in their power to just get by, you know, a mediocre Orlando Magic team to go to the second round. So you do have Mitchell, you do have something. So I don't know. I don't know that it moves the needle for me. I just think it's, they're one of these teams. They're kind of in the middle. They're not really a contender. They're not rebuilding. They just are what they are, second round fodder, so to speak.
Yeah. Cavs 17 to 1 in the Eastern Conference. Speaking of like unbettable prices, the Celtics, the favorites to defend their Eastern Conference as well as the NBA title, plus 125 in the East for them. We also saw JJ Redick. He's getting announced as officially in person with the press conference media availability as the Lakers head coach today. The loan job still open. The Pistons following Monty Williams firing as well. We're going to take a quick timeout here. When we come back on the Lombardi Line, though, we will get to the NFL. We'll get to a little football talk for the first time today, which this is very weird that we're two segments in and we haven't talked football yet. Don't worry. It is coming. There are a handful of quarterbacks that are plus money price to potentially start for their respective teams. Are any of them actually worth a bet, though? We will get into that after a quick timeout here on the Lombardi Line. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the great betting tools and content up at VSiN.com. We've got best bets from hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, trends, and of course, betting news. Today on the homepage, our resident NHL expert Johnny Lazarus has a breakdown of everything you need to know for tonight's Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final from a side and prop perspective. Plus, even as we enter the dog days of summer, you can find daily betting previews for games in Major League Baseball, the WNBA, and more. If you haven't hit up VSiN.com yet, you're missing out. It's your one-stop shop for all things sports betting. Alongside Will Hill in for Michael today, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. And on yesterday's show, when Michael and Femi Abebefe were on the program, they put a poll out to the Twitterverse trying to find out if there is an underdog in the QB to start week one market in the NFL that was realistic. The results, Will, have been tabulated, and apparently None of them was the number one choice with 31.1% of the vote, followed by J.J. McCarthy at plus 220. He had 25% of the vote here. Drake May at plus 200, 24.8% of the vote, and Aiden O'Connell last there at plus 150, despite him being the shortest underdog price to start for the Las Vegas Raiders. What do you make of the poll? Agree or disagree with the results here?
I love Lombardi being interactive, too. He's just such a man of the people. It's great. It's interesting. I think it's I would go with May if I had to pick one of them, just because if you believe the reports, if you believe the rumors, the Patriots turned down a hell of a lot for May. I guess Minnesota offered this year's one. Remember, Minnesota had two ones this year. So Minnesota offered both their ones for this year, a one next year, then some other stuff, and the Pats said no. So if you're if you think that highly of the player, I mean, he's probably going to play sooner rather than later. I know it has to be week one, but I don't know. What's the purpose of playing Brissett? We know what Brissett is. Brissett's a guy who, it depends what's around him. If you put him on a talented team, okay, he can get you like nine wins or something, but this is not a talented team. So don't you want to just throw May into the fire, get him some reps? I know the counter to that is, hey, it's a bad offensive line. You're almost saving him from getting, you know, whatever, saving him from himself, saving him from the situation. But if I had to guess, just based on what they passed, I would say New England playing May is not that outlandish, where he just gets to camp and he wows people. The arm, the, you know, the mobility. Remember, people have compared this guy some mix of Herbert and Allen, which, you know, maybe he's far-fetched. But if he shows glimpses of that, maybe the Patriots say, you know what, are we doing? We don't care if we win any games this year. Anyway, we'll just take our pick. If he has some growing pains, let's get him out of the way now. Let's play May. What are your thoughts?
See, meanwhile, you're funny because I am kind of on the opposite side of that. As you see the odds on your screen, Jacoby Brissett, minus 260 favorite to be the week one starter, May there at plus 200. But for me, I feel like I'm saying it every day on this show that there are more quarterbacks in the NFL that are ruined than they are developed, especially young. And Drake May is somebody who's being, in my opinion, or should be given the opportunity to sit back and learn and start to clean up a lot of the issues that he has with his footwork, with his inconsistencies in the passing game. And sitting behind Jacoby Brissett and not worrying about getting wrecked, to your point, with the offensive line and being in a situation where you're losing a ton of confidence, losing games week in and week out, I feel like it's a good opportunity to develop him and let him watch and learn waiting in the wings. Looking at some of the commentary from the poll on X, though, Mike D wrote, May will only start if the Patriots want to win. Otherwise, if it's a rebuild, they're losers again in the bottom of the AFC East. Conflicting opinions, though. B. Dov says, all of them, none of these should be underdogs besides May. And I still think he starts week one. So, you know, a lot of interesting commentary here. The one I wanted to ask you about on this list was Garner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. So Minshew, a $2 favorite to start for the Raiders this year after he gets brought in on a two-year $25 million deal, 15 guaranteed. JT the Brick was on Follow the Money this morning, and he said he thinks O'Connell will be the week one guy. He'll get the ball to start camp in the preseason, and that there's a loyalty perspective with Antonio Pierce, who believes that Aiden O'Connell has done enough to earn the opportunity. Where do you sit on that?
Hadn't thought of it that way. That's probably a good angle, and I know JT's probably close to that situation, so I take that with not a grain of salt. What's the opposite of a grain of salt? I respect his opinion. Yeah. When it comes to that, just because I do think, you know, he's close to the situation, and I hadn't thought of that where, hey, O'Connell won this guy games. O'Connell helped Pierce get the job. Now look, some of that's on Christmas where they returned two fumbles for touchdowns, but still it's his guy. And maybe there is just a little bit of a tiebreaker that goes to O'Connell just because he's been there before. I do think O'Connell, just because he's younger, maybe has a slightly more upside. But if you're trying to, like, what's your goal for the Raiders? Probably best case scenario, you make a wild card, you make the playoffs. That would be a big deal. That helps everyone keep their job. That's a successful year. Minshew's probably the best guy if you want to somehow get the 9-8. I would think Minshew's just a little bit better than O'Connell, so I get why he's the favorite. But if I had to bet, I'd probably just take the plus money here. And based on what JT said, I think that's another reason to bet it.
I know a lot's made of that Kansas City game where he didn't complete a pass after the first quarter. But Aiden O'Connell, Matt Eumanns came on and he did a blind resume between Trevor Lawrence and Aiden O'Connell the back end of last season. And Aiden O'Connell, if you took away the name, you wouldn't realize eight touchdowns and no picks for him the last four games of the year. I just think similarly of this situation as I do the Minnesota Vikings, in that you signed somebody and you're paying them, like I said, two-year, $25 million contract. Sam Darnold gets brought in on one-year, $10 million contract. Considering what we usually pay backup quarterbacks, it feels like you bring this guy in to be that bridge for whoever your quarterback of the future ultimately will be. And with Minnesota, Darnold is a $3 favorite to start there. J.J. McCarthy plus 220.
I think the betting angle there, I mean, there are some books that have an over-under for McCarthy's passing yards for the season. If Darnold, if that number's correct, Mark McCarthy's around 3,000 for the season. Don't you just play the under and figure, hey, if Darnold's going to start week one at earliest, you're not going to bench Darnold until, I don't know, week four or five. That that 3,000 is very high. I think the bet there is the under because I agree. Darnold's the rightful favorite. Sounds like what are the quotes been there? Hey, there's been some, there's untapped potential with Darnold. They think they can get something out of him. It's a good situation with Addison and with Jefferson, and McCarthy's not ready, which look, if you're trading up, I know they only trade up one spot, but if you're trading up to get McCarthy and you know, you're picking him with the 10th pick of the draft, I mean, he's thrown out first pitches in the dirt. He's looked bad in camp. This is, I know it's June and sometimes these training camp stories can be a little misleading. This is not a good start. This is not what you want if you're the Vikings. You don't feel comfortable if you're a Viking fan that, hey, we got our guy for the next 10 years. We got our franchise quarterback. It really feels like you reach for McCarthy here.
I think that's a really good perspective, though, and a way to approach a different prop market. Another comment that we got on the poll was from at Burgie the Hippie said, and watch out for Mr. Locke in New Jersey for the G-men. If Jones can't push the ball downfield and is making too many bad decisions, again, Locke will be the starter week one for the Giants. Dable's trying to save his job. Same with the GM. Daniel Jones currently a minus 425 favorite to be the week one starter in New York. But Drew Locke there, who was brought in this past offseason, and we saw those reports from Seattle, right, that he was thought to have an opportunity to earn that job plus 275.
I think Jones makes too much money. I think Jones, if he's healthy, will probably get first crack at this. Now you say, hey, he tore his ACL, what, middle of the season? So maybe he's not ready. But if he's ready, I would think Jones is going to play. I've heard this a lot about Dable's got to save his job, hot seat. I'm pretty critical, I think, in coaches. I don't see how Dable could be on the hot seat. I think Dable's done a hell of a job. That first year, they somehow made the playoffs and won a playoff game with very little talent. And then even last year, he's playing Tommy Cutlet. They looked just awful, and they ended up with, what, five wins, six wins? Like, he got absolute. I mean, that is making chicken salad. He really had no talent the past couple years. If he got fired, it would not take very long for him to get another head coaching job. I think he's a really good coach. Now, if you read between the lines, sounds like he could be a little bit difficult to get along with. Wink Martindale, you know, there were reports those two weren't speaking. He can be hard on the players, hard on coaches. So maybe that, we've seen that before with coaches. Hey, he's a good coach, but he's hard to get along with. They end up exiting sooner than their talent should indicate. But boy, I think you're crazy if you're the Giants, if you're letting Dable go. Dable's the best thing you got going for this franchise. Dable, I think, is a good coach.
And to your point, yeah, Coach of the Year, his inaugural season with the franchise. Yeah, give a guy a little bit of time, right? Like, it takes time to build these things up. And no matter what quarterback is starting, they're going to be in a bad position if you continue to have the quarterback killers as your offensive line up front. It's been a brutal situation in New York for years, not just last season, right, which was particularly bad, regardless of what quarterback was under center. Any of these other QB situations interest you? You got Bo Nix, a $4 favorite in Denver, with Zach Wilson and Jarrett Stidham behind him. Russell Wilson, massive favorite to be the week one starter for the Steelers. Apparently, he's got a big lead in that quarterback battle with Justin Fields and Geno Smith, and bringing Sam Howell in for the Seahawks.
I would actually lay the minus 400 with Bo Nix and just bet against injury. If he's healthy, he's going to be starting. So that would be one, but I know a lot of people don't want to tie up their money or lay minus 400. So that's a cop out, but that's actually one where, I mean, you're really just betting against an injury. I don't see any scenario where Stidham starts week one. That would be a disaster. Let me ask you, any of these you'd actually bet? It's a fun segment. It's a fun thought exercise. Anything that where you, hey, I'm going to actually go after the show and bet this market.
I think that if they're a quote unquote lock, right, to your point, I think it would have to be Bo Nix, and you don't want to lay $4. I'm not trying to make this bet in June. But it feels like that's the only one that is really, really on solid footing here and is a decent enough price that you would be willing to pay it. Based on JT the Brick's comments, though, Aiden O'Connell at a plus money price, if that's realistic and Antonio Pierce truly does feel like Aiden O'Connell deserves an opportunity that's similar to what we talked about Russell Wilson in pole position, that's realistic. I don't hate a small pizza money shot at a plus 150. We're going to hit the break. We're coming back to the NHL when we return. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski is going to give us his thoughts on Game 7 tonight in the Stanley Cup Final.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
With NFL training camp starting in less than a month, the VSiN experts have been hard at work to get you ready for the upcoming NFL season. Our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide drops this week and is packed with everything you need to dominate this NFL season. We've got in-depth profiles of each and every team, advanced stats, proven betting systems, and proprietary betting trends you won't find anywhere else. But that's not all. Our experts have weighed in with their best bets on season win totals, futures, props, and more. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or you're just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. And to celebrate the release of the guide, VSiN's going all out with a special coverage throughout the day. Tune in this Thursday for expert analysis, insider tips, and all the NFL insight you need to start the season strong. Remember, the only way, though, to get our all-new NFL betting guide is by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. Will Hill and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line. Game 7 coming up tonight in the NHL Stanley Cup Final. Will the Florida Panthers win their first cup in franchise history, or will the Edmonton Oilers make a little history of their own as the first team since 1942 to claw their way back from down 3-0 to raise that cup over their heads? To help us out, getting into all things Game 7, ESPN's Greg Wyshynski joins us on the Progressive Guest Line. He's in Sunrise, Florida for Game 7 tonight. NHL writer, co-host of The Drop, fighting the good fight with the travel as well, Greg, because we talk so much about the players and how taxing it is on their bodies to go all the way through to this point in the season. How about you? How are you holding up with this cross-country's travel?
Not nearly as good as the players. I mean, we're all taking multiple flights. There's no direct flights from Fort Lauderdale to Edmonton. You know, they're on a plane. It's a charter. They're flying direct. They've got masseuses on the plane, probably. You know, we're living a different life than these guys. But, you know, the bottom line is that for being a series between the two cities that are farthest away from each other in Stanley Cup final history, it's actually gone pretty smoothly, I think, for everybody involved. And the extra days built in that we were all kind of complaining about ended up being pretty mandatory, especially as the series has gone on.
Greg, when you're looking at Game 7, I think the first question you have to ask is, what changed after Game 3? Did something change after Game 3, whether it's strategy, just something fundamental where these teams are playing different, or is it just a case of, hey, Edmonton's played better Games 4 through 6?
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. What changed is that it went to Game 4, and that's usually when the Oilers start really playing. In every round of this postseason, they have picked up their business after Game 3. To the tune of only losing once after Game 3 in the postseason. Stuart Skinner, their goalie, I believe, is 10-0 after Game 3. So they kind of ease into a series, kind of get their feet wet, understand what they need to do defensively, and then act accordingly. And then their goaltender just plays lights out in the latter parts of series. So, you know, it's funny when we think back to when the Panthers were up 3-0 and the Oilers were saying things like, we like the way we're playing, we kind of like our game. Their coach, Chris Knobloch, was talking about his plans for the next 10 days of the series when they're 1-1 away from going home. We're all having a laugh. We're all having a chuckle. They were right. We should have listened to them. they were completely right. And they finally got to their game. And here we are in Game 7.
I was one of them. A tweet that has aged very poorly when Chris Knobloch said, down 3-0, we have shown that we can beat this team. And I was like, where? In what way? And then they go out and reel off 3 straight wins the way they have. How much nervous energy do you anticipate from Florida fans in that building tonight, especially given that you at one point thought that these players were sizing up rings? You know, you were ready to have that first cup in franchise history.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of nervous energy, and that's why, as cliche as it sounds, the first goal tonight could decide who wins the cup. I mean, you have a Florida team that really needs to kind of get that boost of confidence to feel better about themselves after the way that things have gone in the previous 3 games. I think if they give up the first goal, there could be a sense of, oh no, here we go again, and all of a sudden the crowd, or at least the ones wearing Panthers jerseys, because I do expect there's going to be more than a few Edmonton fans in the building tonight, are going to be pretty tense. And then, you know, if they score the first goal, then I think they're going to feel, like I said, that maybe things have shifted. Maybe things have changed. They can get to their game better. You know, the last time that they were here in Sunrise, yeah, Connor McDavid had 4 points. The Oilers won the game. They made it a series again. But their coach, Paul Maurice of the Panthers, said, we really liked the game we played. We thought it was probably our best game of the series, despite being a loss. So they have some things to build on here, but ultimately it comes down to who scores first and how that emotion feels inside the building.
Well, we don't know who's going to win the game, but we seem to know who's going to win the Conn Smythe. McDavid minus 3,000 now. Let me ask it this way. If Florida wins 4-0, 5-1, can somebody other than McDavid steal this award?
Yeah, if Sasha Barkov has all five goals, there's still a chance that maybe he can win the Conn Smythe. Barkov's the only guy right now for me that you can point to and say there is just a glimmer of possibility that he could win the MVP. You know, if he shuts down McDavid, if he scores, say, like a hat trick, or, you know, scores the game-winning goal in a double overtime or something, like, there's a tiny, tiny chance that he could overcome McDavid and win the MVP. I don't think it's going to happen. The only reason it would happen is if you had enough of the 18 or so voters that simply don't want to give MVP to somebody in a losing effort. But the problem is that what Connor did in games 4 and 5, back-to-back 4-point games, no one else in NHL history has done that. He broke Gretzky's record for the most assists in a postseason by an individual. Like, he's rewritten the record book along with willing his team back into the series. And I think now that it's at game 7, it's going to be really hard for a lot of these voters to not give him the MVP based on the fact that he's just, you know, been so important for the Oilers, even in a losing effort.
And I know you are somebody who looks at these odds. How telling is it from a historical perspective that he goes from around minus 275 to this minus 3,000 number following a game with which he didn't even log a shot on goal or a point?
Well, that's just what I'm talking about. Like, the betting market's smart because they know inherently that if there's a counter argument to McDavid not winning the MVP in a losing effort, it would be that maybe they didn't get to a game 7. You know, that was something that some of the writers I spoke to that do have votes, I don't have one, I should say, that do have votes have said, which is that if he gets this thing to 7, then we could probably talk about him, you know, winning in a losing effort. And so once that happens, now you're thinking, okay, there's an inevitability. For those who don't know, there's only been one non-goaltender to win MVP of the playoffs in a losing effort, Reggie Leach back in 1976. The other four times that this has happened, it's been goalies that have won it. You can understand why. You know, they drag a bad team to a cup final or something like that. In Connor's case, I just think there's too much history being made, and there's too much anticipation of wanting to give this guy his flowers, win or lose, that it's hard for me to envision him not winning it tonight.
All right, Greg, no more softball questions for me. Who wins and what's the final score?
we have a round table on ESPN.com. My prediction is there. I will tell you it is 5-2 Oilers. I think we could see a situation where it's 3-2, maybe a couple empty netters boost the score to that kind of total. I should say game 7 are usually tightly played. I think that the scores are kept pretty low traditionally in these kinds of games. And the fact that the referees will probably not be whistling a lot of penalties and probably in the back of their minds know that if they do, it's a distinct advantage for the Oilers in the series, might also hurt the Edmonton goal total. But I just have a feeling that this could be one of those games where Edmonton jumps out of the gate fast, the Panthers are scratching and clawing and get back into it, and then at the end of the day, it's a pretty big spread for the Oilers, and they raise the cup.
It was interesting looking at that article that you have up at ESPN.com this morning where the majority of you were on Edmonton and it looked like those totals were going to go over the 5.5 that we see posted here in the betting market. Last thing that I had for you was just because you mentioned the special teams effort there and how masterful Edmonton has been on the penalty kill. How sad is it for Florida that they get a power play, they get a man advantage, and it's like, actually, this is going to be a momentum builder for them.
Yeah, it stinks, and it's hard to watch. Like, you on one side of the ice, you have basically poetry in what Edmonton does on their power play, and on the other side of the ice, you have like a dirty limerick. Like, it's a terrible power play to watch. I hate watching it. I wish they wouldn't give the Panthers power plays because it's so frustrating to watch really good hockey players not really know what to do with the advantage they're given. So, like I said, referees are human as of right now. Maybe they get replaced with robots at some point, but they're human right now. And I think you have to remember that their prime directive is to not influence the outcome of the game. And because they're human, they know that if they give the Oilers 4 power play opportunities, they're probably scoring a goal in game 7. And so I think you cannot discount that notion of the fact that, you know, penalties that would normally be called earlier in the series may not be called in game seven because of how much that could tip things in Edmonton's favor.
Greg, you're awesome. Enjoy the action tonight. And thanks so much for all of the hard work that you've had covering the series.
No worries. Love doing the show and appreciate it.
Greg Wyshynski, you can follow him on X at Wyshynski. And of course, check out The Drop as well. He and Ardo Cal have done an awesome job with immediate reaction breakdowns of each and every game of the Cup final. Speaking of that penalty kill, by the way, for Edmonton, historic 94.1% kill. They have not allowed a goal on 64 of 68 power plays, two shorties in this series so far. We'll be right back here resetting with hour two on the Lombardi Line. Don't go anywhere.